Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. If you're looking for guidance on the kind of music that comes from the Oshkosh-based band Oralai, iTunes is probably not where you want to start.
The genre listed for the group's first self-titled album is merely Other. Things come into slightly better focus on their newest release, however. Songs for Dogs That Sleep on Beds gets labeled a pop album.
But the music constructed by cellist Stephanie Check and multi-instrumentalist Nate Lehner is really more complex and more interesting than any particular label could describe. Check and Lehner stopped by the Lake Effect studio on a recent trip through Milwaukee. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
How do people react to your music when they first hear you in concert?
Well, it's interesting because the music, I think a lot of times, is very introspective and it's sometimes, very ethereal and cerebral and big words like that. But then in between songs, we just have so much fun, and I think we joke around a lot, and I think it's that contrast that I think, you'll be real heavy into a song and listening to it, and then we'll be rolling on the floor the next minute, and so it's kind of a roller coaster, I guess.
Yeah, I think mostly the biggest response I've gotten is that it's moving, I guess. I think one of the biggest compliments we get along with that is that we're really easy to relate to and to feel like you are friends with us, because we do try to make it a really intimate crowd or a really intimate experience with the crowd and communicating with them and having fun with them, letting them in on inside jokes that they can bring up every time they see us. So,
How did you arrive at this sound?
I guess I was classically trained since I was pretty young. I started playing cello real young. And I think a lot of my rhythms and patterns come from more symphonic music, because I don't pay, like in symphonic music, they can throw measures of 5-4, 4-4, 3-4, anywhere in the piece. And I very much write like that. But for the songwriting itself, I listen to a lot of Damien Rice and Lisa Hannigan. And Damien Rice is actually one of the artists that I was first able to cover when I started writing. So I think I was really influenced by his style of writing.
Well, and I wonder, especially with cello, I would imagine there are cello players out there that kind of find the cello sound an either-or proposition. I'm either going to be playing in a classical vein or in a pop vein, mm-hmm. and somehow you manage to straddle the line between both.
I try. I love the way it sounds bowed classically, and I like making it a versatile instrument. And I was just saying to Nate yesterday, I really love that we kind of start a little fan base of like teenage fangirls wherever we play. And I love that, because I feel like those are the kids that are in orchestras and symphonies. And I think it's good for them to see at that time, oh, that's a really versatile instrument. I could play that and do what she's doing in 10 years or 5 years. And it kind of gives them a little motivation not to quit, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's neat that, her writing style is just really unique. And her playing style is too. We'll be changing time signatures in the middle of the song or adding an extra measure or something. When we were recording the last album, the drummer Namaya, who is in there, you'd be charting stuff out and then all of a sudden be like, what was that? A lot of bands, you could have a good musician just come in and what key is it in and they can just play. And that's not always the case with some of the stuff that Stephanie writes and the stuff that we play, because there are things that will catch you off guard, which I think is great. That's one of the most cool things about it.
Do anything you want, I do anything to keep you in my corner for a little while. Divulge all of your secrets in a parked car. Commit March drunk on your honor, drunk on your mother, drunk on your lover. And you know I would give you anything. Give you anything you want.
My background is not very well classically trained at all, and a lot more self-taught. And that probably helps because I can just go off of more of the melodies and the flow of the music as opposed to like, well, wait.
You're not bound by music theory.
Theory and yeah, all that junk. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. But it's great to be able to just go from some stuff that's kind of rocking and whatever to then some swooning string parts and, you know, more of a classical sound. So it is fun to straddle that line, I think.
Is the act of performing, is it a release for you?
Very much. Very much. I think having that crowd response and that, you know, playing and being in front of people, absolutely.
I guess it depends on how the show goes.
Yeah, right. What makes a good show for you?
An attentive crowd, but not only paying attention, because sometimes a dead silent crowd that doesn't participate is also a little bit unnerving, but I like a crowd that's really in tune with you and like they're not afraid to talk with you on the stage and they don't feel like there's a line and they have to be silent and they're not allowed to speak to you. I like walking away feeling warm and feeling like I've made friends. Truthfully, I love that. I love meeting people through music.
We're having this conversation just after you played a show in Spooner. And I don't imagine most people down here know what the live music scene is like in Spooner. But I gather it's not just a big city that makes for a good place to play.
Yeah, it was actually probably one of the more fun shows that we've played in a while. I mean, it was just a neat little intimate setting. And, you know, people, we were just back and forth with the crowd and having fun. And, yeah, it's great. I think and the people there were just generally, I think, really appreciative of, you know, being there. And that might be a reflection of the up north where, you know, you might not have access to as much, you know, live music as Milwaukee or Minneapolis or whatever.
Actually, truthfully, where we are at right now, and I guess how well we are known in areas, sometimes the bigger the city is, the lonelier you are at a show. Mm-hmm. I have found bigger cities to be a little less personal. Mm-hmm. Until you really become a part of that community, you have to really break into a scene, and then I feel like it opens up to you a little more. But yeah, it's a little bit daunting at first, I think, in a bigger city. Some of those small towns where the people are just craving a really cultural or a really musical or artsy experience. They're so appreciative of it, and they're so happy to be conversing with these people or sharing what they're good at.
Why are you called Orlai?
It was a name I came up with in a dream I had. Yeah, it was a few years ago, and I wrote a song about a dream I had of driving through the mountains of Montana with someone named Orlai. That's really all I have. So I wrote a song, and the cello melody is like the wheels of the tires on the road. So I just called the song Orlai, and then after a lot of debate with the first configuration of Orlai, we decided that it made a good band name, too.
Is that a relatively common way things come to you? Do you get melodies in your sleep?
Not in my sleep. Usually it's like driving or walking the dog or we're cleaning the chicken coop, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I better get my phone and just record a quick little, and that's it. You know?
Yeah. Stephanie is a musical mastermind, really. She doesn't write.
That's a little exaggeration.
Well, no, she's the only person. I've played with a lot of people and have gone to the songwriting conventions and to the seminars and stuff and how to do this and how to do that. I've never met anyone like Stephanie who has never written a single word down of her lyrics, never a single note down, never a single musical chart for any of her songs ever. It's everything's up in her head.
How is that possible?
I think it's actually helping my memory. I don't know how that's possible, but we did joke at the show last night. He brought that up and I was like, boy, I need to wear a helmet when I bike. All it would take is one good thump, and it's all lost.
You mentioned, you know, things come to you while you're walking the dog. There's a chicken coop. The first album was inspired, what, dog?
Oh, that's
songs
our new album,
oh, that's
actually.
That's the new one, sorry.
Yeah, we just released it a few weeks ago. Oh. Songs for Dogs That Sleep on Beds.
I was just going to ask if there is a certain inspiration in the animal world.
You know, not directly from animals, but it came to me right before we even started recording the album, we were just talking about it, and we were just discussing, like, I was like, I want to feel like this and that and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden I realized, I'm like, you know, writing music is a really sort of embarrassing and clumsy procedure. You don't want people around to hear you do it because it's a lot of mumbling, incoherent words and singing the same thing over and over and over again until something comes from you. It's just an ugly thing. But I realized that through the writing of all of the songs on this album, my dog Bella was present and laying there and loving every minute of it. The only minute that she didn't love is when I would stop singing and then she'd wake up and stare at me like, how dare you? So I was like, you know what? Dogs don't care if you're awkward or clumsy. They just care that you're with them, and apparently they love music.
Dogs want to know how the sausage is made.
That is, yeah, they want to see every bit of that procedure.
So given this process that you're talking about, how did you know when the album was done?
That was a bit of a fluid process, too, because there were some songs that we thought were going to be on the album. And after maybe putting down the bed tracks and stuff, we're like, you know, maybe we should just table this and attempt it later. And there was one song that got written. What song was it that got written, like, right at the very end of the recording process where we were like, oh, man, this has got to go on the album. No doubt.
I think it was Love and Everything, because yeah. I believe that one only had a first verse and a chorus. And yes. I was like, man, let's record this. This is a great song. We finished writing it literally like as we have the mic set up. I'm like, hey, give me a minute. Finish the lyrics. We're like, we're going to do another verse here, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Finished it up. And the first time that song was ever finished was in the studio, the 5 minutes before we were going to record it. But I kind of like operating like that. Makes me feel sneaky, super smooth.
Does it show? I sing tired, heart sings low, baby. Give me something hard to kill it quickly. You're leaning slow and say you miss me. You're leaning closer when you kiss me. When you kiss me, nothing happens. Maybe you'll find someone who makes you see love in everything. Once so warm that they'll absolve all of your suffering. My eyes are moons from feeding all of my light to your darkness. Still you're not full.
From my perspective, when I'm doing more of the engineering and the recording, and I do a lot of the booking and the stuff like that, I can look at the calendar and be like, I want to have this done by this date, because if we don't have it done, we're just going to miss out, you know, on getting it sold and getting it released. But you still don't want to cut any corners, you know, and you want it to be awesome and you don't want to sacrifice quality or putting something out prematurely.
Do you feel like are the songs still evolving even after you've made the CD?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So the CD is really freezing that song at a certain point in time, but it doesn't limit it for you in terms of the songwriting process.
Right.
No.
You want to let those breathe, you know, even after you record it. It doesn't, I mean, just because it's recorded, it doesn't mean that that's all right. And that's always the way you have to play it. There's stuff that we've changed already since the mm-hmm. album's recorded, or I'll play something a little bit differently, or we'll sing something a little bit differently, or we'll get ideas, you know, from other musicians that we've brought in, like, oh, that's a great part. And then we'll, you know, try and incorporate mm-hmm. that when we're playing just as a duo.
Some of the songs, a handful of the songs that we play predate Nate, actually predate any of the bands I was in. And how I played them then and how I play them now are radically different. Even like some of them back then, they were more slow indie, and now they're more rock and poppy songs. And it's funny because fans from way back that heard them in their original state, some of them are like, I don't like that anymore. You're doing it differently. And I'm like, well, I am a human being, I am evolving, and you need to change with me.
Let me just say, Stephanie, Nate, thank you both so much for coming in and spending some time with us, and come back and see us and bring your instruments.
You bet.
Yes,
thanks,
please.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Cellist Stephanie Check and multi-instrumentalist Nate Lehner are two key members behind the Oshkosh-based group Aurelai. They'll play a show Saturday evening in Burlington at the Tall Tales Music Festival. You can find a link to more about them and their full schedule at WUWM.com.
Your eyes are miles of wilderness. Oh, the city air makes them gray.